I'd like to call this meeting of the Taney County Commission Thursday, January 31st, 2013 to order. We have just concluded our preliminary study meeting where we spend first half hour going through previous county commission minutes, accounts payable, and other business that we are going to be addressing during the day. Our first agendized piece of business is agenda request review. Nikki, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. You'll notice several items requested to be placed on our agenda for Monday. Number two was requested yesterday. That's why it's not in with the dirt agreement that's on for this morning.
I'm looking at all the requests with the exception of number one, because we're still waiting on drafted contract, I suppose. But is there a reason why we can't agendize all six of those following items next Monday?
No. I think we have
the time.
Huh?
We have the time on Monday.
I think we had a phone call this morning, and number seven is, it had to be rescheduled. It's out there at the end because of an accident.
Place this back on the agenda because it was actually due, she was due to be here this morning to speak with
you
gentlemen.
Would you check with that group, and if they're ready to make that presentation, we'll either do that, well, it'll
depend on
her recovery.
Yes.
Number six, that's simple, but I would like to move any personnel request where we have from HR or others towards the end of the meetings.
Okay.
That gives the public and the media the opportunity to hear all the open sessions without
Correct.
Us closing and coming back. I would also like to get a copy of number five if there is a mitigation resolution ahead of time so that
I
could read it. You've got it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You want to explain more fully to me number four? I thought we were in that process now.
We are in the process. Our attorney has reviewed it and just need to get you gentlemen to approve and sign it, and then we'll begin work.
Monday.
Okay.
Is that something we have already agreed to on number four, and is it something ministerially that I could do, or is it?
Well, they were low bidder, and how you guys have done it in the past, even though a bid is awarded, there still has to be a contract in place.
So we'll have the official agreement to sign at that time.
Correct.
Let's do it Monday. Well, let me back up.
Yeah, that makes sense. We approved the agreement.
And Donna's going to have a presentation on National Forest Distribution?
Correct.
Okay. Is that a report? Is it a...
It's something she has to do. We haven't been able to distribute funds because of the regulations they put, the new regulations they put behind the forestry money. And she will just give a report. It's just something...
And I have that report if you would like to see it prior to Monday.
Did she email that to us also?
Hmm?
I believe she emailed it to you, gentlemen.
This afternoon, I think our last item of business is county policy.
Correct.
The directions that we're going to head. If you provide those copies at that time.
Okay.
Okay. Number two, Monday as well, field dirt agreement. That takes no time, really.
Okay. Is there anything else that you gentlemen would like?
Only if something comes up, and I'll keep notes on that today to bring to you.
There is something I'd like to And I don't think we can get it on there Monday because we've got several of these items. But there's state statutes that prevent first-class counties from exercising certain regulations, or as we went through with 911 and had to be attached to Christian County legislation to be able to put that on the ballot or to even consider it. The same way with the nuisance ordinance. I've been had several calls on nuisance. First-class counties were, as I understand it, were left out of the same statutes that second, third, and fourth-class counties are in as far as being able to produce a ordinance with enough teeth in it statutorily to work on the nuisance part. There's several things like that that the public is unaware of. We get a phone call regular on certain situations that we have no control over whatsoever, and the public thinks that that we haven't looked into this or done our job when it takes a the old term is an act of Congress. It takes state legislation before that we can provide the service that they're asking for or even attempt to do some of those things. And I'd like to make a list of those things. Ron, you might be more up on what the statutes are on the first-class counties versus the third-class county, same as how you were here during that stretch of time that when the change was made or right previous and then now. But
you mean when Abe Lincoln was president?
Yeah. I hate the fact that sometimes when we get a phone call and they say, well, you're not doing anything about this particular issue, and you try to explain that situation to them. And so those are some things I'd like to look at are statutes that apply to first-class counties versus the second, third, and fourth class. There's special legislation for different counties all over the state that's written into the books, and it's troublesome that somehow that we, as a first-class county, were left out of that position.
There is time on Monday, even with all these items.
We're this afternoon, again, as we're discussing policy, how we actually conduct meetings, et cetera, might also be a good time to broach that subject and then how to go about tackling it. That's
fine with me.
I'm willing to do that. It's a big job.
Yeah.
Anything else for Nikki? Our next agendized item is just simply listed as fire inspection. Renee? Nikki? Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to do a fire inspection on this building.
If you'd know, if you'll just pull the microphone closer, there you go.
This building here has never been checked. The flashers, the smoke detectors, the pull stations, and I can have it done for $809.21. The only thing is that it'll have to be done when there's business going on in the courthouse, and if the alarms go off, that might shake up a few people.
Renee, I have no problem you moving forward as soon as possible. Just make sure we notify everyone so
I will.
They know what's happening.
I will.
Anybody else, Steph?
That's fine.
We're ready to move forward.
Okay.
When you say that it has to take place during regular business hours, is there a reason for that?
There is. It would cost us double if they have to come off hours.
And that is that a quote from
Simplex.
Simplex.
Yes.
Do we have to give it? Is that not a bid?
It's not.
It's not. It's under the.
Yeah.
But
no,
one
it's
thing.
Under the contract.
Yeah.
One thing I don't understand is. It's going to cost us a lot of money if the fire alarms go off and everybody has to pull off their whatever they're doing, their systems and everything, and exit the building and go to a location, which might not be a bad exercise, but it's going to cost us money either way you look at it. It's going to cost us more than $800 if everybody in this courthouse has to leave for and go outside for an hour.
Is that required?
It is not required. The only thing is that for safety reasons, if this building would ever, you know, God forbid, lit on fire, nothing's never been checked to make sure that it does work.
Well, you're talking about working hours. What if we schedule this at
on off hours?
8 in the morning or at 4:50 in the afternoon,
well, the
10
only
minutes
thing,
prior to
like
closing.
I said, they'll just charge us more.
No, but if it's done during regular hours and it's the last few minutes or the 15 minutes before closing, that's still within regular hours.
Because this will probably take a half a day to do. There's so many.
Well, we need. I had no idea it was that extensive.
Yeah,
that's
it is.
Why.
They check everything. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I was going to do, and I was going to tell you that I was going to see if they were available on the 18th. And that's this month we're off for President's Day.
Right.
And then I would come in and they could do it and there would be nobody here.
I'll check and see if they'll do that.
Have they got some written policy? Do they have something that we can read that
I can
statutorily
get
we're required
yes.
to do and what would be involved? I would really like
okay.
to do that.
Okay, all right.
How about you? I agree with you. If she could do it then, that might be the exact solution that we
most
need.
Most of the time, the fire panels, they silence these and the alarm never goes off. But I'm just saying that in case there would be something wrong and the alarm would go off. And
well,
then everybody would, you know.
If you bring us some information so we
I
can
sure
take
will.
A look at that, it'll give us a better handle
okay.
on. Is it okay if I, do you want to take that or you, Brandon, to work with her specifically on this?
It's a decision on the $1,600 versus the $800 figure, as far as I'm concerned. And if they're here during the day and we have a fire alarm go off, and we would be crazy not to evacuate the courthouse as the fire alarm went off, whether it be one as a them testing or whether it be one as an actual fire. There has been stranger things happen that we might have a fire at the same time the testing was going on. But we would be under, and it's going to cost us way more than $800 or $1,600 when you count all the employees and their salaries for us not to let them go ahead for twice the money and do it during.
Bring us the information
okay.
and let us take a look at it if that's all right.
All right. Thank you.
Do you understand what I'm saying, Ron?
Yes, sir, I do.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, we have a fill dirt agreement.
Yeah. Where's the location at? I wonder if Randy, if we got other people on that same location. That's the only thing that I wonder about sometimes on these is.
Randy, are you here for the dirt agreement?
Yeah.
Danny, do you have a question or two? There you go.
Do we have any other right in the exact area?
No.
Where are
we
allowed
we've got trying to get a little bigger mass, but we don't have any right in that area.
Okay. No.
That's one that's close to Birmingham Road, so that would
okay.
help us a little bit there. We at his site and everything to make sure it's more capable of
getting in,
getting in there with trucks.
Yeah. Are you, Brandon, are you new on the dirt agreements? How, what they
no.
pertain to? Do you know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, I understand what they do.
Okay. Motion for approval of the fill dirt agreement with Denny Martin for Road and Bridge.
Second the motion.
Motion has been made and seconded to approve a fill dirt agreement by and between Taney County and Denny Martin as presented. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed nay. Motion carries. Parking garage maintenance, part two.
No matter, I'm going to be here a while.
You're going to be kind of long? Let's do the parking garage, Ron. Randy, do you have something else for us, or you're coming back?
You've got an easement there to
approve. We'll good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, thank you. This is a parking garage part two, bid number 201212-205. It's been out for over 30 days and we've received six packages. Mr. Paul Black, who has been designated or ordained as the project go-to person, is here with me this morning, and I'll just start opening these and we'll just see that the dates are everything signed, and we'll probably need some time to review all the responses. The first one is from Heartland Restoration Incorporated out of Ellsbury, Missouri. And it is signed, and it looks like the correct copies are included.
Sir, would you give me that name one more time? I know it's Ellsbury, right?
The name of the company is Heartland Restoration Incorporated out of Ellsbury, Missouri.
Thank you.
Checking to include all the addendums.
Do you want us to go through each one of these packs just to make sure all the addendums are signed? And because there's been several.
Personally, I would like you to open them, and then following this, if you will, take some time to go through. You're going to do that anyway, are you not?
Yeah.
Evaluate them and then bring back to us the information that you find.
Okay.
So I would prefer that you do that at the time that you
okay.
go through them. Is that all right, Dan?
Yes, that's on the spreadsheet so that we can evaluate.
This one is taped and retaped.
Oh, that part that says open here.
It's all, they put like Titanic tape on the pull cord. But I got it out this way. There's more than one way to skin an oyster, you know. This one is from Mid-Continental Restoration Company. And Fort Scott, Kansas.
Yes, Fort Scott, Kansas.
I think this is the, is this the company that was awarded the project
yes.
Part one and we're still waiting for contracts on that.
That's scheduled for Monday. We just did that this morning.
They have signed the correct copy, and or signed the main original and submitted the required numbers of copies. Third response is from MTS Contracting Incorporated out of Springfield.
MTS?
M as in Mary, T as in Tom, S as in Sam, and it is signed, the original signed, and all the requested required copies look to be there.
Okay.
Now this one is ready for the Titanic trip. I'm telling you. This is the one I got all the calls on yesterday. I'm going to go to the post office. This
There's
morning.
Another.
When I get done, there'll be one little envelope inside. Yeah, they can put a nickel in.
Wow, that was three envelopes.
Okay, this one is from L.S. Black Contractors in St. Paul, Minnehota, and it's signed with an appropriate amount of copies. I should have had Scott come up here and help me with this. He did a great job last time.
Yeah. So let me ask a question.
No, that's okay.
The last company was Black from St. Paul. No relation, is it?
No.
To Paul Black sitting here today?
No, none that I know anything
about. Just wanted to make that clear.
This one is from Carson Mitchell in Springfield, and they have signed where required, and I'm moving on to the last one. Although this is the one that I had a panic about just a little while ago. Looks like they've packaged up each copy separately.
Well, quite frankly, I'm glad to see such interest. That's
a lot of interest.
Okay, this one is from Merritt Construction Services in Farmington, Dakota, Minnehota also. So Minnesota is a big player in this. So those are the six packages. It's signed, and it looks like they've submitted everything that we've asked for. We'll go review. When would you like us to return? How long do you think it would take, Paul? This or
an hour?
We have we can either have this brought back this afternoon, and or, I guess, later this morning, or reschedule it for Monday. But since Mr. Black's here.
Yeah, because there's some questions I want to ask.
Could we... I would entertain a motion. Well, let's see. entertain a motion to postpone this item to the definite time of 11 a.m. this morning. If one of you would offer that motion.
I'm looking at the, yeah. So moved.
Is there second. A second? Motion's been made and seconded to postpone at the definite time of 11 a.m. Parking Garage Maintenance, Part 2, RFB 201212-205. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed nay. Motion carries. So if 11 o'clock, you would return with a breakdown for us and your findings of those bids, we would certainly appreciate it.
We will. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, gentlemen. Transfer station. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Mr. Stottle, would you like to join us up front?
No, he's not.
What I thought when I saw him throwing his hat back there.
I don't want him getting us sick.
Well, it's red.
Are you okay?
I don't feel very good.
Well, we've got some slides to show you, but while those come up, you've really got two main options to look at and numerous ones in between. You could, to be in compliance with DNR, just fix that header and add a door on the front and fix the one on the bottom and do the updated manual and produce a site overview. Or you could upgrade the building for some safety issues and more efficiency, which should be a new floor, a tamper that Randy's looking at. We've moved the drain to the front of the building, which should have extension on the building, wider doors, and even possibly look at a second set of scales. So when we go through these, that'll give you an idea of what we're looking at for decisions.
And basically, what you wanted us to do, I guess, kind of present to you what we're going to do as part of our study, things we're looking at.
For the public certification, Travis, do you mind giving us just a short summary of why the county was looking at undertaking this project in the first place, DNR's suggestions and recommendations to us, and why we are looking for options to move forward?
Basically, when you added your glass bunker to the transfer station, they kind of that makes DNR look at the permit, and the operation and maintenance manual hadn't been updated since 94, I think it was. Still had components in it that aren't even at the transfer station anymore. So they requested an updated operation and maintenance manual, an updated site plan, and adding doors, because those have been proposed previously and were never completed. So those three items have to be done. And while you're doing those, we're looking at, do you want to do anything else or just meet the bare minimum?
And so this morning we're going to more or less look at what those options might be and how we might proceed. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Basically, this first slide, I assume you're all familiar with this area, but just kind of overall view of the transfer station, scale house and scales, transfer station itself.
Up here are your storage tanks for the runoff from the transfer station.
So, the first part of what we're going to do is examine the existing building, make sure it's structurally sound. This first picture, you can see there's some issues there that may need to be repaired. And I'll go through these pretty quick, so if you got questions, just holler. We're going to repair a lot of the existing siding this is on the back side of the building where trash has been pushed and knocked it out and replace that. Insulation's falling all over, which you may not need insulation. It may just be a matter of removing it. We may go back and replace it. We'll study that. And then there's an opening on the back of the building that's never been filled in. It's just kind of a hole in the building, so we'll do something with that too. Second part of the existing building we want to study is the tipping floor. You can kind of see where Scott's pointing there is actually a big old dip in the floor. So we need to figure out if that's a structural inefficiency problem or if it's just settled a little bit and it's not a problem. That's part of what we're doing with the geotech report. They'll go in and actually core sample that because no one actually knows how thick that concrete is. It may be structurally sound and you just have to deal with a little dip, but that obviously collects water and it's kind of a hassle. So, along with that, if we end up replacing the floor, the way the floor slopes now, all the water ponds up by that little office. From what I can gather, it sounds like originally the water sloped towards the trailer, which you don't really want that either. You want it sloping towards the front of the door, then we put a drain at the front of the door and collect the any water that gets in there. So if we replace the floor, we'd adjust the slope. And then we'd also look at those sides.
When you say replace the floor, take up what's there and put in a new floor?
Possibly.
Okay.
The problem with this is we can't just put anything over the top of it because if it's not probably a minimum 8 inches thick, it's just going to flake off when you're pushing the backhoe on it. So then if we end up doing something like that, we probably look at those that concrete push wall on the side, either getting rid of one of those or kind of realigning them, gaining some extra space there. Behind one side of those walls, there needs to be an emergency area where if someone comes in and drops off 20 car batteries that you didn't catch before they dropped it off, you have to put those somewhere, temporarily store them so they can be properly disposed of later, and that has to be an identified place. And then we're going to look at adding two building additions, basically, roughly a 20-foot section on the front of the building and then a little section on the loadout tunnel just to be able to enclose it with trailers completely inside.
Here's where that header's bowed, and there's that beam that one of the early pictures.
And that it's kind of hard to see in this picture, but that header is actually kind of bowed out. So if you decide to just add doors on the existing building, there's probably going to have to be some structural work done regardless. I don't think the doors would probably work on there right now. But this is the only picture we had of a truck actually dumping, and it doesn't quite do it justice because it's not one of the real big commercial haulers.
That would be just a real small one, wouldn't it? That's what I thought. I never could catch one that was one of the big ones.
What happens to those big trucks, there's not enough room. They hit the header if they dump inside, so they pull out. So the front part of the truck or the dumping part is outside the building. So by adding the addition, they would be able to completely raise the bed inside the building. And then this is the loadout tunnel where we'd enclose that area. And we're also going to look at, along the front of this truck, you can see those kind of steel plates where it funnels the trash into the trailer. We're going to look at doing the same thing on the back side so the trash doesn't spill over the back side of the truck. And then somewhere around that trailer, too, possibly add a tamping crane.
Where would you add the tamping crane on the...
It'd be one of those two sides, either right there or possibly on the other side.
So you wouldn't have to put it on the back side. You'd actually put it on one of the sides.
Back side would be great, but there's just not room back there.
Let me ask you a quick question before we go any further. I'm looking at where the building is at. Is there room and is there a better location on the property aside from where it currently is located? Because I'm thinking if in fact we go full tilt into this and build a new building instead of what's existing, we're going to be offline.
That, yeah. Go back to the very first one if you could. But I don't know if any place is better than the other. Where the trucks pull out, it's kind of like a walkout basement. You know, it needs to be lower than the tipping floor. So actually the slope and everything works pretty good where it's at. One thing we were kind of talking about this morning is right now this is the main entrance. We could potentially, with the road and bridge not necessarily needing a lot of this space now, move the entrance up here so you'd have more storage space inside the facility for cars. But right now they back up along the canopy.
Because they both have to use scale in and out. The outs are waiting to come out and the ends are waiting to weigh in.
So show me again how you might do that.
Yeah, we're talking about moving the entrance up here and either there's options there. You could leave the entrance here and use this as a scale and possibly add a scale to come out so you kind of get a better flow of traffic, or you could, I hesitate to say move those scales, but potentially we could move those scales, add another scale, and just move that one up here, make this an entrance. So what happens is cars pull in,
even after the weigh, they got to make this turnaround and back in. So this kind of becomes your congested area. If you have the scales up here where they come in and weigh, they come all the way over here and turn around, so you're not getting all this traffic right in here. And that's kind of better. They come out straight this way and this way, so you wouldn't have all this. The cars coming out here, trying to cross the cars coming in here, and it's just kind of a congestion.
I really don't know if that option would work with road and bridge functions and everything in the fuel tanks where they're positioned. If it was transfer station alone there in that building and could go away, that would probably work, give more room. But both operations there, a lot of times it gets pretty congested.
What's the lay of the ground on the back side, your upper left-hand corner? All, right, all the way? No. No, the corner.
All the way over there?
There's some big mountains of dirt right here, a storage, right, Dave? And then I think it's pretty flat until you get to this ridge right in here. So that's pretty much all, except for all the storage, there's big mountains.
That's just a problem. And there are some, is it apartments up there? Or some kind of residential on the back side of this? That
I guess a kind of daycare school. There's a daycare and a...
Right, there is a daycare on the back side there. Another thought was, what would it cost to rebuild that building, but in a different location?
You're talking about the R&B building?
No, the transfer station. Depending on the retrofit cost, would it be cheaper just to build a new building on the same site somewhere, change the operation, and you don't have to shut down the operation while you're under construction, and then
that's where I was headed,
that goes away.
You think that's probably the best location on that site?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think it's a fine location where it is, but if it does work out cheaper to just do a new building up, I wouldn't say there's not another location that could work, too. But I guess kind of what the point I wanted to get across today is that's what this initial contract is there's all these unknowns and trying to figure out, put some costs together so you can see what's it going to cost to add this addition. If we end up having to redo the tipping floor, does it end up cheaper with a new building? Or kind of get some background information so you can make some of these decisions, because a lot of these questions I don't know that we can answer yet.
Well, I would be interested in seeing if you put two sets of scales in, for sure. I've been out there through the free trash days, and people that come in and bring household trash during that time, they get hung up, I imagine, on heavy workload days, how congested it is out there. I would be for building a new building. After looking at that building, I'd patchwork cost as much as new work a lot of times, especially with the way that some of the pictures you've showed us there with the whole sides being bowed out and everything. So I would rather that we would look at a new building with two scales. And I don't know whether Randy was talking about fuel tanks on the other side. Now I know the Road and Bridge barn is a pole barn, isn't it?
Yeah. It was basically started out just a pole building, and then it had been added on to.
Right. We could move that. Ron, I don't want to move any closer to a daycare center or anything like that than what we have to. I don't want to get up there and present that problem. But what I would think is that if you just look at that picture, the work barn for Road and Bridge is exactly in the wrong spot.
I agree with that. I agree with your thought that it's in the wrong spot. I'm not sure that the back corner spot or in would be a bad location for what we do in that R&B building, but you think it might.
Do what?
I think it'd be fine for Road and Bridge.
In this building,
transfer station.
This building, right, but it's somewhere in there.
That's what I'm saying. It should be moved to another location. It's R&B function there where it's sitting is, I guess the reason it was there was because it's initially put there at the transfer station. This property was bought for the transfer station. And I did some calling this week about surveys and who all was involved in surveys, and talked to some old-time surveyors that had been out there on the project who did the Buchanan, when the Buchanan Road was added, and have more information on that now than I did have before the weekend. And quite interesting to listen to what went on during that time frame. But
do you want us to call you?
Oh.
Save some time. We'll give you a call.
What do you guys think about moving the... Now, the road and bridge barn there is going to be... We've cut that workforce into half almost, haven't we, Dave?
Yes, sir.
And with the addition of the Mount Branson barn.
Let me follow up with what you're saying, because there's two options, obviously, if we're using this property on the transfer station building itself, either to try to renovate, like you said, all too often that can cost the same or more than a new facility itself. Either way, we're going to have to close down operation unless we build a new facility. Just back up where you're pointing to the... Is there a site there that we could utilize for a new transfer station building?
Well, we've already got a glass bunker here. This is a steep embankment here, and depending on where the property line is there, I'm not sure where that's
not
at that
deep.
Point. Do you, David?
It's not very deep.
There, there. But it gets closer.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if you moved the map down or if you had a picture of that, but if you want to keep the same type loadout the way it is right now, we're just pushing in. We've got a kit for the truck to back into. Let's do the same thing here. Use that same method. Have a place for the truck to back in. Utilize this. You can keep this in operation. If you built one here, all of this would have to go away. You'd just be the other side of this glass bunker. And then once you got that in operation, this would go away. But it's still, you've got all this in the way of people circling and going through there. This has to be something done with, or make a dedicated road. They can either come in here, navigate over here, and then make another exit place for them here and scale.
Another thing you got to think about, this is the world is built around us. At this location.
Yeah.
We've talked about it for years. We've got school buses. We've got safety issues. We've got road and bridge trucks with buses in and out. And I think that the study that you guys are doing is a good study. I'm not sure that this location is where we would want to go ahead and keep this for 20 years down the road with everything that's happening out in that area. I mean, basically, we've got entrance and exit to the high school, the new middle school addition. There's a new addition for another school out in that direction. We have already talked with Dr. Hyder about the widening of the road. So I'm not positive that this is the location to keep the transfer station at.
What are your options with that property since you bought it with a grant? So
I'm not sure how long that is in effect. We'd have to do all this is something you'd have to check into. I mean, that thing's been there since 92.
That property was bought in the 70s. Housing Urban Development Grant.
It was bought in the late 70s, right. And the transfer station went in operation in 1980, somewhere along there, 79, 80 went into operation. The road and bridge building wasn't built till 84. That's when it was first built.
Yeah, and I'm confident it was Housing Urban Development. You bring up whoever that was brought up a good point about the grant, and we need to go back and look at that because those were federal funds. I don't remember that it would have such a clause in it, but it very well might have. Typically, they did in those days if you received funding for a particular project, and it was the transfer station.
And the other thing to think about, too, and I'd have to do some checking. If you build a new building, I don't know, permitting-wise with DNR, if that You know, right now we're just modifying the existing building, not a big deal. Especially if we move properties, permitting alone. It's not a huge ordeal, but
I know it's
public
slow.
Doesn't typically like it either. So.
It's slow. It's a slow operation. But we also have to think about the safety of the citizens over there in that area and the kids that are going in now. That's a through road now. I mean, it goes out to 248. And so
let's see if we can find the original paperwork from, there was a file I remember from years ago regarding the transfer station. What restrictions were placed upon that? Maybe we should also look if, in fact, we have the ability to do what you're suggesting. We'll have to find a secondary location.
We're just throwing out ideas.
That's all I'm doing as well. But we'll have to find something that's off that highway, I would assume, or that has tremendous access for.
I know that Brandon has, but have any of you been there when school is let out, other than the Road and Bridge boys, who see
yesterday
brand new BMWs and everything else flying down the center lane, passing cars, all that kind of nonsense that goes on with teenagers.
Just two school times that released, the high school.
And that's just the parents going to get the kids.
That's just the parents, yeah.
And that's before a new school opens there again next year, too.
That's correct.
Right. And so we've had talk about this. We have to also take into consideration the widening of the road, which is probably going to be double the size it is now.
How difficult do you think it would be to resite with the regulations that are in place from Fed and the state?
I don't think it would be too bad as far as getting it through DNR. The biggest thing is I'm sure you'll have to have some kind of public hearing, and that's thing the solid waste for is not my backyard type sentiment. That wherever you put it, somebody's not going to be happy, I'm sure. But if you can get through those obstacles as far as getting the permit through DNR, I don't think it'll be a big deal.
But the other consideration is our timeline of July 2013.
And they may completely waive that if you tell them, hey, we're going to look at
building
a complete new one. They're not going to make you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on doors or something if you're going to build a new facility, I'm sure. They just want to see something going on.
I'm concerned about the safety out there. I don't want that on my conscience as making a decision on something that might not happen now, but it might not happen in 5 years, but there's the real possibility of us being involved is with Road and Bridge and our facility there.
Another small thought, the property just north of it, there's a driveway there. You might contact that individual to see about moving that property as another entrance and just eliminate this for the transfer. The Road and Bridge could still use it, but bring your transfer in from the other side.
From another location.
Right.
Yeah.
Bring them in off the outer road?
Well, on that outer road, yes, there's that driveway there.
And okay.
It's pretty close to the property line, but that's just kind of a thought.
Mm-hmm. I think all those things have to be considered.
The congestion depends on your volume that we're getting. Last week, we had some more tornado stuff coming in, and we were bad congested. This week, we're not. Last week, we took in over 150 tons.
150 tons
per day.
And your average is 80 normal?
Yeah, I don't know what it was this week. Probably wasn't that much this in winter time, but that's it.
But an average, yearly average is about 80. But what Travis said earlier is part of all these decisions is what was in his first, the study part to see.
Say we didn't have looking at a new site or even a new
right.
building, really. I mean, we were going to evaluate how we could modify the existing. I mean, we could add in a new building, and then as far as a new site, if you come up with a site, we could evaluate that. But I don't know that we could find you a site, but if you show us another site, we could add that in, of course.
This is not the first time this new site has been brought up. Ever since I've been in office 8 years ago, we were talking about a new site for the transfer station.
Well, there's a lot of things to take into consideration regarding that. And all the cities that have contracts with their haulers, and there's a lot of individuals and companies that are going to be impacted by what the county does. You want them to go ahead with whatever else they have for today, Dan?
No, really don't. I don't, other than what we've brought up and the consideration of a new site, I don't know that. You've already completed the work that you're going to present, right?
Yeah, that's.
So.
Like I said, that was the main point of this, was just to show you all these different options and try to narrow down what our scope needs to be on this. So.
This commission needs to make a decision whether or not we want to do what it is that you brought to us on that site, or to seriously consider another site, or if there is another site that would be feasible. I also agree with the statement of NIMBY. We're going to have that to deal with.
Yeah.
How many acres is in the other location you were talking about, the joining?
I'd have to look at it.
58.
Brandon's got it here.
It's 58. 58.6 acres. Now this one here.
Really? That one worth the process tree?
Well, I don't know. I guess they sold that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't give a. And this up here is the 58. That's what it's already got there.
Road entrance.
How many that is?
That 58 acres, is that part of C-Meeks and their property, or is it all different? Really?
Well, I was wondering how deep.
Show them the front, though.
This one here?
Yes.
How many acres is that?
Brandon, part of that property.
What is the front of
your 2.5 acres? The outer road? Is that property between us and the outer road?
Yes. There's two pieces. Yeah. There's one on the north side, and there's one on the east side. The east side is 2.58 acres. One on the north side is 58 acres. I don't know what easement that is.
It gives us space, Dan, but it doesn't give us a different location.
Right.
Well, it gives us a better entrance off.
It gives us a much better entrance.
And when we're talking about permitting and all that, that might...
Because we've got this site and it's already approved. I mean, that
might make it easier. But I still don't know whether that. Well, a new entrance would help with the safety part of it, too.
Right. I think the location's fine. I'm just worried about, like you said, the safety, but even if we move the scales. I would look at options here, making it safer, you know, as opposed to looking. Before we look for a completely new location.
Well, I'm sure also that there are a number of people that utilize that road every day would like to see it somewhere else.
But you're going to run right into the same thing with what he said earlier. Everybody's going to have that same
NIMBY. Guys, what do we want to have them do? I appreciate the fact that you brought this to us. It is what we requested.
Yeah. I see enough problems with the old building that I just think we need to consider a different facility other than patching on a 20-foot piece on the front, and we've got bowed-out walls, and we've got beams in the roof area that's tore loose.
Can we have Scott continue to
head up this?
Lead up the group that to pursue this, take a look at those acres in front, any possible alternate plans, Travis, that we might do where, in fact, we build a new building rather than the existing facility that's there, if it's possible to build it while we have that one open or if it has to be shut down.
It'd actually be easier if you build a new one, leave the old one in operation.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
that was one of our concerns. Is how
would there be a better site to do that? Would it fall on that frontage? Might that be a possibility? If you could bring that back to us, we would certainly appreciate it.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Might be a...
David, how involved are you with this?
Pardon me?
How involved are you with this? Not the transfer station, but just with the what needs to be done. And
you taking care of what needs done.
I talked with Dave. Yeah, he's in the loop, except for me. Underway.
The amount of fill and everything that was be needed this year, as you see, we have fill agreements and everything all the time. It's the amount of fill in an area that's added on to, that's no problem whatsoever. We just, the quantities would be something we'd need to figure in on a new site plan. That's what we're trying to come up with anyway to satisfy them, isn't it? New site plan?
Yeah.
So.
Thank you, gentlemen. Scott, if I could call upon you, turn that light on in the back of the room for us. Rick's got it.
Okay.
Thanks, Rick. Grant, for easement, right-of-way, Mr. Hayes.
You should have a original grant of easement there. We're actually granting... Branson Echo View LLC an easement to run a zip line aerial across Lakeshore Drive to top edge of the bluff there from the landing.
Were you talking about a grant of easement for at what?
Well, we're granting them allowing an easement to go across the road. They're running an aerial line across.
We took any airplanes that didn't used to, that planes would land in the water there, and do they even do that anymore?
Well, they got to deal with MPAR as far as crossing the lake and all that yet, too, so MPAR's got to grant them.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
You mean this is being presented to us for our consideration? Okay. And this is being presented on behalf of whom? The Echo Views LLC?
Right. It went to planning and zoning proposal, and because they're crossing our road, King County's maintained road.
Mr. Ashley, could you join us?
Are you talking about the road, Lakeshore Drive?
That's yes. What he's talking about.
Yes. It's actually a zip line that they proposed and was granted approval through planning and zoning. Begins at the landing, goes over to the top of the bluff on the other side of the lake there.
Where the adoration scene's at? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I've seen it.
And then ride a zip line back. But they're actually crossing our road.
So, Bob, this has been in front of planning and zoning?
Yes.
Planning and zoning has given approval for this application? Yes, it was approved, I believe, back in September of 2012. Okay. Of course, it's kind of an unusual application in that a portion of this is in the county, and then, as Randy had said, a portion of this is in the city limits. It's my understanding on the city side of this that since the landing was approved as a planned unit development, at least what was indicated early on when this came through our process was that they were going to require building permits on the city side, but this was already an allowed use, apparently, from my understanding on their side. And so, but we held a public hearing on our portion of this. This would be a ride where basically everyone would enter and exit the ride on the landing side. On the county side, there's just really going to be an observation deck where people can get out on the observation deck.
What comments were made to the fact that we're looking at putting a zip line over an existing county road? What liabilities might the county incur? Have the council weighed in on those questions to P&Z?
I don't believe the council has commented at this point that I'm aware of.
The only thing that I thought as far as R&B, that we would have to grant them some type of right or easement across aerially over our roadway. Now, it hasn't been presented to council as far as their input, and we may need them to look at this to see if there's something we may want to add to this before it's...
How wide is our easement there, Randy?
I think on Lakeshore we have a 50-foot wide easement. Basically, this description on their easement is actually perpendicular to our roadway, and it's a 50.14 wide easement. But it's overhead over, but it's actually described, you know, at ground level.
There wouldn't be anything that would be placed on right-of-way?
No. Nothing structurally is placed on our right-of-way. It's basically, it's cables running aerially.
Do you guys have any questions of Mr. Hayes?
I think it has to go. I think we have to have an attorney's opinion on this.
Okay.
The reason I say that is because it states that they want a permanent
and perpetual
easement. And okay, the fact that at that point it doesn't say anything. Is it aerial easement? I mean, what they're talking about is the road.
Right. It's actually should be an aerial easement.
Yeah, and it's not stated that way.
The description doesn't basically state that.
No.
So maybe we need to rework. Maybe it needs to be a different easement form in itself may be required here.
I agree that we need to have council go through it because it could be interpreted too many ways to give them easement across that county road.
Okay. I just attached their description to what our normal standard grant of easement, so Let me run it to council and get their opinion, then bring it back to you.
And if council, if they need some detailed information too, I can provide them the information, you know, that we have as far as even some visuals, if okay. they need to kind of visualize this. And they presented quite a few conceptual drawings of this, and it's a little easier to visualize or to see when you can see this thing drawn out, you know, in some 3D drawings and things.
If you would pass that on to council, one of the questions that I would like to have answered is there any liability that the county would have, any reason for us to address current liability coverage that we have based upon this, because it's such an unusual
right.
request.
Okay. Can I have that original? I believe you have the original.
I'll have them look at that. Or if they tear up the road, we'll find it. Maintain it or
it's basically airspace, but right. that's not what that says.
Well, they might have to get on the road to build
this,
it.
This easement form here that I attached you to is going to have to be redone to
accommodate that.
Accommodate that.
You know, I had a thought on this one too, and I don't know. They also have to obtain easement from Empire
right.
for crossing the lake. I wonder if we could look at what kind of terminology they used for that easement. You know, if we could look at their because I know I don't know where that stands, but I knew they were going to have to obtain easement to cross the lake as well.
I want to pay a dollar for it.
We'll have to have counsel.
Is the amount that they're offering to pay in line with other easements that the county grants?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that.
I don't think so. Okay. You'll follow up on that, Randy?
Yeah.
What I'd like to do is for you to get that information back to us so that we have time to go through it before we bring it up to discuss it. Hopefully, that following this afternoon, we're going to try to set up some future just general discussions, but if you guys are ready, we're ready to move on to the. Do you have anything else, Randy?
I'm not sure if there's anything else to give your agenda.
I do. I don't see anything.
I think this was the last thing. I think Trevor did something else.
Thank you, gentlemen. Flood buyout update, signing the HMGP and CDBG funding approval.
Okay.
Mr. Ashley.
I've got quite a bit of documentation for you here. I don't want to bury you with things, but there's basically three different things. That I was going to present to the commission. I'm hopeful that you've already got the, I've been told that the HMGP application was mailed directly to the commission office. And Shanna had indicated that
you're looking to me, aren't you? Let me see what I have here.
Sorry. But I do have the CDBG application and then also a draft order. Yes, and that's the other one.
Would you like to take that and then tell us what it is okay. that you're going to have us do with that, sir?
Okay. Well, I've got a copy. I'll leave okay. the originals with you here.
Let me read what we have on the front page of this letter. Can we okay. start that way?
Okay.
And then
yes.
we'll be alerted to what we're looking at. We are pleased to notify you that the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, has approved funding for Taney County to acquire and demolish 9 residential properties located in Taney County. Specifically, $2,836,612 in federal funds is now available for the completion of this project. The non-federal 25% cost share to be provided by Taney County is $945,538 for a total estimated project cost of $3,782,150. Since federal funds are involved, we must adhere to certain guidelines. Enclosed are two sets of the funding approval and grant agreement forms. Please sign both, retain one set for your files, and return the other set to us for our files. We look forward to working with you and your staff. If you have any questions, please call, and it lists the name and the number. For clarification's sake, Mr. Atchley, the $945,538, which is to be provided by Taney County, is being provided through a CDBG grant, is it not?
Yes, yes. And then there's a second letter from CDBG, and it's here. It basically indicates since they are separate grants and separate entities, they've each given a separate approval, even though these two grants will work hand in hand to accomplish this flood buyout. Basically we've got two separate funding agreements and approval letters.
And I understand, but does the amount of the grant equal the amount of monies that are called for and the cost share to be provided by Taney County?
Yes. In fact, and I was going to call about, I'm going to call about this today. I did notice that the CDBG funding award, it is actually stating that they're going to provide a little larger amount.
Well, actually, it's something close to, $30,000, but I assumed that was for some of the costs that we have already borne through, whether it be demolition or...
I believe that's correct. I think, and I believe that part of this difference may be the administration costs. I think that's why that this amount's a little larger than this 25% amount that's shown on the emergency management grant. The third document I've presented, and I can let me if you don't mind, let me kind of explain a little bit too. SEMA, the State Emergency Management Agency, held an orientation session in Jefferson City last Wednesday, and Mickey Davis and I attended that orientation session, and essentially they were really supposed to present these contracts to us at that time. For whatever reason, SEMA did not have that contract prepared at that time, and so they overnighted it directly to the commission office. We met with both the SEMA personnel and the personnel from the Missouri Department of Economic Development in order to go over the requirements of both of these separate programs. But one of the other documents that I've presented to the commission this morning, and I believe that the commission had formally done this somewhat informally, is they also require a county commission order, basically stating that the presiding commissioner will act as the representative for the county commission on these two grants, because both of these funding agreements just call specifically for the presiding commissioner's signature. And so this other document is essentially the commission stating that they're allowing the presiding commissioner to sign on behalf of the county commission. At the city level, the city of Branson is going through the same process. They'll have to have an agreement that the Board of Aldermen signs allowing the mayor to act on behalf of the city, basically.
So what you're telling us, that we need to make a motion. Actually, there's three motions involved, one for the CBG, one for the FEMA, the other one for Mr. Houseman to be the representative.
Yes, yes, that would really be correct. I think that would be the
three motions in themselves would be what we would need to do.
Bob, if you would come up here.
Yes.
What I'd like you to do is to work us through in order that we should, each motion as it should be taken and approved. I'm going to let you look at the originals we have and then what she has laid out. That's what you brought, correct?
Yes.
Does this contain the signatory approval in?
I think it's probably best to start with the motion. I think this decision was really made, and don't let me misspeak, but I felt that really last year the commission had basically kind of informally made the decision allowing the presiding commissioner to sign the application forms. And basically, FEMA wants us to formalize that. They've requested, and I've just really utilized their draft language in drafting this order.
These are three copies of the same order, correct?
It's just three copies of the same order where really it's just authorizing the presiding commissioner to act on behalf of the full county commission.
Before we vote on it, I would like to ask Commissioner Williams if he'll read the Taney County Commission Order Flood Buyout Program as presented by Bob Batchley, who in fact is representing FEMA in this order, at least to us indirectly.
Be it resolved by the County Commission of Taney County, Missouri, that the presiding commissioner is hereby authorized to submit an application to the State of Missouri Emergency Management Agency to pursue funds to conduct a hazard mitigation project using State of Missouri and FEMA funds. These funds are intended to be used toward acquisition and or relocation of residential properties damaged by past flood events. It is expressly understood that all properties purchased under this grant must be removed from the parcel of land in question. The land that is acquired through this grant will be owned by the Taney County and must be restricted as to future use. By submitting this application, the county asserts that an evaluation has been conducted of all potential non-open space needs for this land, including use for flood control. The county has determined that there are no such needs identified, and therefore the county is, with full knowledge, willing to commit to the purchase of this land and the placement of a permanent and irrevocable deed restriction that will prohibit future non-open space uses, including levees, flood walls, and other flood control structures. The enclosed excerpt from Robert T. Stafford Act, as amended, has been reviewed and is understood. The only question I would have, though, real quick, guys, is it says on this letter from Department of Economic Development, it says that our CDBG field representative will be contacting us soon to arrange a meeting with us to discuss the procedures and requirements of the program. I would want to know what the procedures and the requirements of the program are before I signed anything.
And that's not an issue with me at all.
But we have, in fact, at least through you, been undergoing a series of discussions, if I'm not mistaken, regarding how we got to this point.
And basically, he's going to come in and speak to all of the specific requirements of this CDBG grant now that it's been approved, what our processes will be from this point out, basically.
But technically, there's not going to be any monies expended by Taney County until those monies are received, until the federal 75% of the funds are received, and then, if I'm not mistaken, then the 25% that comes through the CDBG, the Community Development Block Grant, that was applied for.
But by
those monies won't be passed through until they're received.
Right. But by accepting the money, what are we adhering to? I would want to know, what the requirements and the programs are. And maybe you guys already know all that, but I don't.
In a nutshell, we're buying the property. which is, rather than the federal government buying it, rather than the state government buying it, it'll be property that's owned by Taney County. But we're not using Taney County taxpayer dollars to do the purchase. We're purchasing it through the programs that were in place. And then we are committing to the fact that John Doe's not going to build a house down there, that there are other things that can't be
done. We won't do a levy. We won't do any flood control.
All that would be explained at that time. But,
but our concern would be that we don't end up with a piece of property with some hazardous materials and all those things.
Well, and that's
another part of the grant.
But let me kind of take you through, if I could, just
please do
in very general terms, kind of this from here on out, from my understanding. Essentially, what will happen, and I actually got some, what I feel like is some positive news on this as well. I didn't understand some of this initially. Of course, as you gentlemen know, the county has budgeted for these funds where we're showing this amount of money coming in, but we're also showing this amount of money going back out. But it's my understanding after attending this orientation session that essentially the county would not even have to seek reimbursement. That, for example, one of our next steps will be to seek an appraiser, to put out a bid to hire an appraisal company. And it's my understanding after attending this orientation that basically once the county made the decision to hire an appraiser, for example, that invoice could just be submitted to both CDBG and FEMA, and then they pay basically their portion, the 75%, the 25% of that bill, of that specific invoice. From here, basically, the next steps on this, and we just held a meeting with these property owners on Wednesday, but essentially the next step on this will be to hire an appraiser. I believe the county will likely have to put this out for bid. We have to show that we contacted at least 7 to 10 appraisal companies, and there's also a requirement that we show that we made an attempt to contact companies owned by either minority groups or women. From there, once we hire an appraiser, there'll be an appraisal made of each property. At the same time, we can also hire or go out for bid for a title company as well.
I'm missing something, Bob.
Okay.
Haven't we already reached the point that the value of the properties has been decided? The federal government has agreed to what that money is for each parcel of property?
Well, at this point, and that's the thing that's been really strange about this whole program to me, but we actually haven't established the exact purchase price for each house.
How did they come up with the total amount of grant dollars that you're going to pass through?
Essentially, on each one of these homes, Mickey Davis has had to go in and put together an estimated value. And then we'll have to come up with an actual specific appraised value. The appraised value on each of these homes, too, has to be a pre-flood market value. And so they're actually going to have to, the appraiser that's hired is going to have to come up with an appraised value as of April 1st, 2011. And so they're actually going to have to do an appraisal where they look at comparables from 2011. Once they establish these values, there's an actual offer that's made to each property owner where...
What if the total amount they come up with is more than what they've approved for the buyout program?
Well, that's been one of my questions as well. I don't know what the process is if we do have to amend this, but
they're not going to do it. when I say that this buyout, it's not going to be done in mass. Here's the amount we agreed to for each house, and it equals this amount. I mean, I would hate to be ninth in line, and the eighth eat up all the money, and the ninth receives nothing. I mean, it surely can't work that way.
Well, and my understanding is the same as yours as well, that I do know this for certain, that it's a process where we sit down with each individual property owner, and an offer is made based on and one thing too that I should add, this total amount is really supposed to be for the value of each home, plus the cost of demolition, plus the cost of the appraisals. That is one thing I've got to find out is if the amount were actually larger than the amount that was approved. I don't know then if I don't know exactly how that works, I'll be honest with you. I know there has to be some way that we can go back and amend that figure, because basically they're supposed to cover the full 75% of the program, from my understanding, and CDBG would cover the full 25% of all the costs of everything from the appraisal through the demolition of the properties of the houses.
What happens if you get down to some point and somebody don't accept the appraisal?
I was about to ask, what happens if they don't accept it?
Now, that is, and that's possible, and I'm glad you've brought that up. This is a voluntary program. Although, let me explain a few more things here in just a second about that, too. This is a voluntary program, so any of these property owners could decide not to accept the offer, and they actually have two different options.
One is they don't get bought out, right?
Exactly. One option would just be for them to back away.
It's their property.
The second option would be for, they have an appeal process where they literally can say, well, I think my property is more valuable than what your appraisal shows. And they would actually have to hire their own appraisal and pay for their own appraisal. Both of those appraisals are submitted to FEMA. FEMA has a third-party appraiser that determines which appraisal is correct, and a lot of times, from my understanding, they may actually establish a middle ground, basically, where if one appraisal came out at $400,000, one came out at $420,000, the FEMA appraiser may say, well, we think the actual value of this property is $410,000. And so they do have the ability to appeal this appraised value that they get. The other thing that they can actually appeal is they can't receive, most all of these folks, we were very fortunate, most all of these folks had flood insurance. And they can't receive what FEMA refers to as a duplication of benefits. And so if they received...
So probably we're looking at the value of the land and not the structure that was covered by insurance, possibly?
It's possible. It's possible. I'll give you a realistic example. The majority of these homes are probably average in the $400,000 range. The majority of these folks had about $200,000 in flood insurance. And so essentially what they would be looking at, it is a buyout, receiving a possible buyout amount of around $200,000, because they've already received $200,000 in flood insurance, basically. I really believe that...
Which would fall under the amount that's here.
Exactly. I really feel that it's highly likely that our final amount will actually be lower than what's approved, because I believe it also takes into account this other $200,000 or so per house where they've already received flood insurance payments. And so if anything, I think we're going to run out.
But now what if they receive flood insurance payments in 2008 and then 2000? What went with the two floods? Because isn't there some instances where they got flooded out, they rebuilt, they got flooded out again, the insurance company said, we're not going to give you the full amount again, we're only going to give you half? Is that right, or am I misunderstood?
Well, I was really surprised at this, but in all honesty, some of these folks did receive flood insurance payments in 2008, and then many of them received the maximum, from my understanding, that you can receive in flood insurance payments is $200,000. And some of these folks actually received close to the $200,000 in these last flooding events in 2011. And I believe out of the nine folks that we have in this flood buyout, there was only one that didn't have flood insurance. The rest all had flood insurance in place. And so many of these folks, some of these folks did receive a flood insurance payment in 2008. But for the most part, that would have been put back into the house, repairing the house and everything. And many of the majority did receive another payment in 2011. The thing that was a little strange, FEMA looked upon these two 2011 floods as one event. There was just one disaster declaration. But the floodwaters actually rose twice. The homes were flooded for about a week.
In 2011?
Yes.
Oh, I know. My store had two foot of water in it.
Yeah.
And I had it closed for 2 weeks and got everything cleaned up and it came back again. So I'm fully aware of what happened.
Yeah.
That's why I bought a new location.
I understand.
I do understand.
One other thing I do want to throw out there, this is a voluntary program. However, since these homes are in the floodplain, early on we had to determine if each house was substantially damaged. Using FEMA's terminology, we had to determine if each house, if the damages were going to be more than 50% of the market value. And if the damages were more than 50% of the market value, they have to come into compliance with our floodplain management ordinance, which means they have to elevate the homes.
So the ones that are still there, then that's why you've seen them build up?
Well, most of these folks that are a part of the flood buyout, well, really all of the folks that are part of the flood buyout were found to be substantially damaged. And so if they don't take the flood buyout, they'll either have to elevate the homes a foot above the base flood elevation, which in most of these cases would be 15 to 17 feet in the air, or 15 to 20 feet in the air or so, or they'll have to tear the structure down. They have to remove it from the floodplain. And so even though this is a voluntary program, for some of these folks, realistically, it's not going to be feasible to elevate some of these homes, 15 to 20 feet in the air, basically. And so if they didn't accept the flood buyout, they'd almost be looking at a situation where likely they would just have to tear the house down.
Is the two things, there's one thing that we can do today, and then the other two things are something that you mentioned, and I basically don't know how to move forward if we're supposed to have someone here from the SEMA program to explain the county's responsibility. I want to get these people paid as quick as we can. This has been a long, drawn-out process. But I think that one of the documents that you brought forward has already been addressed. We can go ahead and make another motion to allow Ron to sign all the signature pages of these programs. I'm prepared to do that. The other two things, if it states that we're supposed to have orientation or some verbal assessment of what the county's responsibility is, then I don't know whether we can conduct this without
and
that. I don't understand. We've got to this point, and everybody, I know everybody was here yesterday when the tornado alarm went off, and they were here trying to figure out. They've been to numerous meetings trying to get their money, and I want to get them paid just as quick as we can. I would like to know what the county's responsibilities are that they're going to tell us, because I have no idea. I think I can summarize it myself, but I'm not hearing it from a person that's going to be a delegate from SEMA or FEMA.
I could really request, and I don't have an issue with that at all. I could really, and I think that a representative from both would be agreeable to that. I can see if possibly I could have both a representative from SEMA and from the Missouri Department of Economic Development, if potentially they could come to a county commission meeting and come at the same time, even potentially, and go through both programs. And what the
10:43.
I don't know how quickly I can erase that, but
I don't want to wait. In fact, and because of the being expressive, we've been the ones continually that said, don't drag feet. If there's any dragging the feet, it's going to be FEMA or it's going to be SEMA. And we haven't done that. We've been complying with everything we've done. Now that these pieces of paper in front of us, and we have questions that do need to be answered, do you think it's possible that we have it by Monday? Have the answers if, in fact, they can't be here?
Exactly.
Have the conference call?
Well, and my other thought as well is Mr. Davis has done a number of these flood buyouts.
Yeah.
And I know that he could answer
could
questions.
Could we have Mr. Davis potentially here Monday?
I believe we could. I really do.
The reason I state that is that's our next meeting date.
Exactly.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we're at mandatory training. So there
okay.
will be another.
Okay.
We need to do this ASAP.
I agree with you.
Danny, you had made comment about number one, the first and only thing that you brought up formally thus far, is that the Taney County Commission is formally giving approval to the presiding commissioner to, in fact, act on behalf of the Taney County Commission. Well, I'm not going to act on behalf of the Taney County Commission unless we vote for me to do something, but this is part of the rules that they have promulgated that they have to have in place, even though that's what we recognize within the state of Missouri as being part of existing law. But I think it would be good to go ahead and do that. Then we'll ask Bob what the next step is, and do today what we can get done so that we have it out of the way. Basically,
is that motion for both of the programs, Ronnie, or are they listed on that?
This one was actually specifically for the FEMA portion of it. I don't know if it states that.
What it states is it is the intent of this order to seek funding through the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program and to authorize the presiding commissioner to pursue activities in an attempt to secure funding and identify the project manager. This is all part of that Robert Stafford Act.
Well,
it's the full commission, even with me signing, mm-hmm. which gives me the authority to sign on behalf of the commission. That's what this says, right?
I'm going to ask that be entered, because that's a rather long motion. You've read it twice there, that part of the motion be entered into the record that
okay.
Mr. Houseman has the authority to sign on behalf of the commission with a vote of the commission.
Do you just want to say order number 131-1301?
That would be fine. And I'd like the full wording to be presented to the clerk's office in the motion.
Talking about the Taney County Commission Order Flood Buyout Program, the first...
That would be the resolution that you read.
Right.
Right.
It's already been read.
So. Right.
But your motion then is to approve the resolution and order number 1-31-13-01 as presented. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded to approve the resolution that was previously read and order number 1-31-13-01. Discussion?
The verbiage on the
front page. Did that pretty much, that came from the Robert T. Stafford Act?
This was actually draft language that they presented to me at this orientation session that SEMA provided me.
I'm assuming that it does because the last sentence says the closed excerpt of the Robert T. Stafford Act as amended has been reviewed and misunderstood.
I believe so.
I'm looking to see if there's something else that's enclosed with us that I don't see.
And the signature page has all three signatures on
yes.
it, approving you to be the one.
Well, as you stated, you're not going
to... There is a further application that has to come through the presiding commissioner's signature to be sent in, is what this says. And yes, that would come to the county commission for approval before the presiding commissioner's signature. I won't sign any documents until this commission has approved.
That was my thought as well. And of course, that was...
This is telling them that my signature alone would be...
Kind of what we already do on the
formal. Yeah. Right. All in order of the motion, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. We have three copies, gentlemen. I'd like us to sign all three.
There, does it matter?
Bob, make sure that we get a copy of this.
Oh, yes, definitely. And that was my primary reason for doing three was I was going to provide an original copy to SEMA, one original copy for the commission office, and then one original copy for my records, just in case, just so if FEMA comes in and audits me at some point, I've got an original copy too.
Well, I'm going to ask you, Bob, on this meeting Monday, if they can't, we can't have somebody here that they have a conference call with us so we
okay.
can get this done.
I agree. Well, and that way they can answer any questions that I may not have the ability to. And I will also, like I said, I feel that Mickey Davis will be able to come as well, and like I said, he's dealt with a multitude of these flood buyouts, and so.
All right, your next step would be the funding approval itself. If I'm not mistaken,
yes.
This is the.
Yes, this is the actual funding approval agreement, and so this is literally, and there's two of them. This is literally the agreement between the county and the Missouri Department of Economic Development.
What I'd like to have, again, on Monday is a discussion with Mr. Davis to answer any of our questions that we have on these documents. Will that work?
Yes, and I will also see if I can have a representative from the Missouri Department of Economic Development and a representative from SEMA here as well, because I, like the letter says, the Department of Economic Development's already indicated that they wanted to set up a time to basically go through the next to go through this grant from beginning to end. and to kind of walk us through this. And so I'm going to see if potentially he can be here Monday.
They provided us with a CDBG administrative manual?
They've emailed it to me. And I can make that available to the commission as well. FEMA has actually given me, this is actually FEMA's manual, and they gave this, they just gave me the one copy at the orientation, and I've made a copy of this for Mickey Davis as well.
There are certain questions asked in that first letter that you read to us or visited us about. County's responsibilities, and this is exactly what I need to know before I have a
that's what I was asking. Is
signature.
Yeah, I understand.
I don't know what I'm signing. I don't like if Harris sign it, and then we'll come down and tell you what your responsibilities are. I want what the responsibilities are before we sign it, not just.
I understand. Well, and I really, with them coming down personally, that way they know every, you know, specific detail, and they.
Tell Andy you would like to come down and visit the
Exactly.
So they'll probably be paid than him, is that right?
Well, he will likely send our contact person is this James Robinette who works under Andy Papen. Although Andy may be willing to come down as well.
He's a really good guy.
He is.
Involved in the process that we went through to secure the $3 million for biosolids program.
And he's a very nice guy, very, very easy to work with. But it's been my understanding.
Do me a favor.
Okay.
Run, and I apologize for interrupting.
No.
Run just a plain copy
of
these funding approvals and give a hard copy to each one of these commissioners so that they can read. I have
exactly
been through.
Okay.
Processes with DED and the four.
Okay.
Fairly familiar with it. I would like them to read that.
You can email it to me.
Okay.
So you can email it to me.
Yep. Okay. And do you want me to hold on to the originals for now?
Yeah.
This one's the DED one, and then here's the FEMA one.
Well,
so there's.
This is not life, though. It's not the. This is something.
Yeah, that they consider that the actual agreement as well, and so they're each a little different, which is kind of, I mean, two separate programs.
Do you need? Well, this says
CDBG wants us to mail all three originals back to them, and then they say they'll mail one back. FEMA wants us to sign both, keep it original, and mail them one.
Is this the one? Let's start there. Is this the same motion for FEMA as it was for CEMA? Is it granting the same ability? I see the subgrantee signatory representative.
Yes. So this is the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program grant, and this is literally, from my understanding, this would actually be an agreement between Taney County and CEMA, the State Emergency Management Agency. This set would then be an agreement between the Taney County and the Missouri Department of Economic Development for the CDBG grant. So they're two separate programs that are having to work hand in hand to accomplish the same goal, basically.
What else do you need this commission to approve today before we have that meeting on Monday?
I don't think there's anything else, really, at this point.
I don't think that this just gives the presiding commissioner authority. I think it approves.
That is the actual agreement. Yeah, that's the actual.
All these documents?
Whichever way you would prefer.
Raise your hands.
Okay.
I would like for you to email actually each of us.
Okay.
And it'll give me a chance to read and review that as well. Please secure enough time through Nikki.
Okay.
For us to move forward on this coming Monday.
And I think,
as a matter of fact, if you could put that in our hands when we're having these discussions this afternoon, that might the sooner the better.
Do you all just wish to have an email, or would you like both? I can make a hard copy and an email.
Emails,
I mean, it's not.
Email's fine.
Okay.
Is it?
That's fine, man.
Okay.
What does? Ron, is council going to be down here Monday?
I don't remember.
I don't think it's until the following week.
Okay.
Scheduled for Monday, correct?
Yes.
think of any other questions you might ask Bob at that time, if we could get them to him, that he could in fact ask those questions, and
you'll have to.
We can move forward.
Oh, exactly, exactly.
You'll have to set the time up with Shanna, and it'll have to be coordinated with both those individuals being here. But if one of them can't make it for a certain time, definitely put a conference call request in.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And thank you. Yeah, I will try to ensure that these individuals are here.
We have all the documents now.
Exactly. Yes, right here.
Did your girls have that? I gave him all the time.
Exactly. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Previous meeting minutes. For 2012.
Got the ones you get signed here, that's the same one, isn't it? 13th, 15th. I thought we'd already approved those, but apparently not. Motion for approval of meeting minutes for November the 13th, 2012, and November the 15th, 2012.
Second, the motion has been made and seconded to approve previous county commission minutes dated November 13th and November 15th. That would have been last year, so it'll require a vote of Mr. Strahan and myself. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed nay. Motion carries. Previous executive session minutes from 2012.
Motion for approval of December the 10th, December the 19th, December the 20th, and December 31st of 2012 executive session minutes.
Second, the motion has been made and seconded to approve previous executive session minutes dated December 10th, 19th, 20th, and 31st. Again, that is a motion that affects minutes that were from 2012. It'll be Commissioner Strahan and myself voting on those. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed nay. Motion carries. Commission minutes from 2013.
I don't know if you're at 11 o'clock or is it?
We'll come.
Okay. And then do you want me to, the ones that you weren't present for, do you want me to separate those out?
No.
No?
I'm going to prove that I was absent, and that's part of it. So.
Okay. Move to approve executive minutes for January 7A, January 7B, January 8th, January 10th, January 14th, and then January 17th, both A and B.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded to approve county commission minutes dated January 7A, 7B, January 8th, January 10th, January 14th, January 17A, and January 17B. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed nay. Motion carries. Executive session minutes from 2013. We've already done those?
We just did them.
We are done with our minutes then. Court orders.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You should have the exhibits there in front of you.
We can prove those in post.
The easiest one to start with is the personal abatement reconciliation. Again, these are court orders where a mistake was made on the original bill. A new add-on was created for the convenience of the taxpayer and sent to the collector's office, and I simply deleted the old bill from the tax book.
This is a personal abatement reconciliation. Is that how it's listed?
Correct.
We could list that as Exhibit A with today's date.
Motion for approval of Exhibit A.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded to approve Exhibit A, which is personal abatement reconciliation as presented. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed nay. Motion carries. You have...
The next one is titled Abatement Status.
Yes.
Pages 1 through 4 are personal property. These are refunds that have been sent to our office by the assessor. And three of them are from 2011. All the others are 2012 tax year.
Let me ask you a question real quick.
Mm-hmm.
You said the first four pages are personal.
Correct.
My fourth page says real estate on it.
Correct. First three pages are personal.
First three pages are personal, okay.
Yep.
Let's do these in two. Let's call the personal property abatements Exhibit B. And these are, again,
refund
somebody
requests.
Might be assessed for having the wrong year boat.
Right, or they may have had a duplicate assessment.
Right, and there are some refunds included in here, correct?
These are all refunds. Mm-hmm.
Is there a motion to approve Exhibit B as presented?
Move to approve Exhibit B as presented.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded to approve Exhibit B, abatements on personal property as presented. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed nay. Motion carries.
Finally, we have the real estate abatements that have been presented by the assessor's office. These are all for tax year 2012.
Very quickly, let's first label this as Exhibit C. One is a house burned. Three are properties that are owned by city. A couple are no business on property. One was owned by the Conservation Commission. That's the gist of what we have in front of us.
Motion for approval of Exhibit C.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded to approve Exhibit C regarding real estate abatements. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed nay. Motion carries.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Kristen. Don, we're going to hold you just a couple of minutes longer. We had postponed the definite time of 11 a.m. a discussion, Mr. Black, with you and Mr. Erickson, if you could rejoin us to talk about the bids this morning. Don, this will just take a moment. I'm hopeful. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Thank you. Mr. Black and his company had put on an exhibition upstairs that I was in awe over on how quickly they were able to take all of the information from the six responses that we had and create a spreadsheet with help from his office, and they emailed it down to my location. We printed it and reviewed it, and I think we're prepared to make a recommendation based on that. I don't know if the commission wants detailed responses from each particular company. If you do, we can give you totals, and I'll let Mr. Black take it from there.
Mr. Black?
Would you like me to give the totals and all the bids?
No, but I would like that made available for the press or anything. But all we need to know is the first and second in line.
My point out, there was one math error in the contractor's submittal. It was not in the first or second bid, but there's one math error, $3,000 math error, which we were able to find and correct. The low bidder was MTS Contracting, Springfield. Their total amount was $69,448.57. The second low bidder was Mid-Continental of Fort Scott, Kansas. They are the ones that were the low bidder on part one. Their bid was for $96,317.60. There is a fairly significant difference between those two. The bid of MTS is actually about 72% of the second bidder's number. So that is somewhat significant. I will say that reviewing the bids, it was not one big glaring item. It seemed like MTS had a lower bid on several of the repair items that required repair cementitious material.
And by comparison, which is the highest, Paul?
Oh, the very highest bidder was LS Black Construction, and their bid was for $175,394.90. Now, that's a pretty big range, and it is indicative of the type of project this is. It is a little difficult, I think, for them to put a number on some of these items. And so I guess I'm not too surprised. I mean, that $175,000 was way high. The next one down was $134,000 odd. Next one down.
Go ahead. Who's the
134? 134 is Carson Mitchell. And then number four was Merit Construction. They were at $119,000 or about $120,000. These are rough figures.
Okay.
The third highest was Heartland, and they were at $117,049.
In the
well, that's such a difference.
It is
in an amount, but everything was bid, and that's just their bid. It's that much lower.
Yes, from the itemized sheet, they were like addendum number four. Well, addendum number four was just kind of a clerical clear up. Addendum number three was that was some plates. That was not a big item. Addendum number two was a fairly big item. It was the height limiter structure to put back up. That was item number 11 on the sheet. So it's obvious that they all picked that up. In fact, MTS was actually a little bit higher than Mid-Continental was on that height limiter. So there's not the differences are like in the area of repairing these locations, these spots, these areas. MTS seemed to be, you know, maybe 50% of sometimes what Mid-Continental was.
I'd like to put you on the spot, if I could, just mm-hmm. for a minute. There were two phases to this.
Right.
First phase, the company came in as second lowest bidder, the company
yes.
that received the first phase bid. The yes. bids for today, they came in second lowest, correct?
The same company?
Mid-Continental.
Mid-Continental was a low bid on part one.
That's what I know.
The second low on part two, yeah.
Is there going to be any problem with them completing part one and not being awarded part two?
Mm-hmm. We discussed that. Mm-hmm. We talked about the possibility of the advantages or benefits of continuity with the same vendor. And
the difference in money is $26,869.03.
My question, Ron, is not the direction you were headed. It is, can we still depend on them to fulfill part one mm-hmm. since we awarded that to them? They may not. I mean, they're quite a ways away, have to mm-hmm. come down. It was for just a minimal amount compared to that. That's my concern.
I understand. Mm-hmm.
And if
and
that
and
is
they
the
haven't
case,
started yet, so they might not want to. Right.
Well, we haven't signed the agreement yet either for part one, but that comes on Monday. Mm-hmm. But my question is, did we have we had another bidder, did we not? Or bidders, if in fact
yes.
that bidder were to back up, or
well,
that was my thinking.
Yeah, MTS, they were I think second. No, they may have been third actually. Come to think of it,
project one.
Yeah, I'm part one.
Part one.
But they were again. They were very tight bids. On
okay.
Part one. I think maybe part of your question is that maybe the difficulty of having Mid-Continental make this small repair one And we may authorize them to start work about the same time, apparently. Or you could actually get part one done before part two, you let it go to start. But either way, I don't think there would be a big problem with the both of them working on that. So let me
rephrase my comment. Maybe it would be worth a call from us to discover if that's going to change their minds. And if, in fact, they're not interested in part one, maybe we could work something out with a low bidder here. If not, so be it. But I was just looking ahead to...
Well, for instance, you could ask Mid-Continental, would they like... Well, you might want to ask MTS first. MTS, would you honor your bid on part one, which was probably... It was just a couple, $300 more than Mid-Continental. Would they honor their bid on part one? And would Mid-Continental be willing to give up their contract on part one?
I'm just saying that were there to be a problem, mm-hmm. we have a backup. Mm-hmm. I'm not willing personally to vote to spend that much more money to award this to a company. That just doesn't make sense with the mm-hmm. huge disparity between the bids.
It's a concern of mine.
I might suggest one more thing if you want to consider this. For instance, on MTS, they were, almost $27,000 less than Mid-Continental on this bid. It's, I think, always appropriate to go to MTS and say, are you sure about your bid? Do you want to pull your bid, or do you want to stick with it? My thoughts are is they would say they'd stay with it. Contractors don't like to pull out, unless it's real obvious that it's a huge error on their part. And I don't think it's obvious that there is a huge error on their part in this case.
I mean, I'm delighted to see that bid. Mm-hmm. We had prepared within the budget to spend considerably more. So it's one of those cases that where we budgeted more than we needed, which is great because we need to save those dollars, and that will come incrementally through the year. Guys, I'm all ready to, I wasn't prepared to do that earlier, but I'm all ready to move forward with approval and then leave it up to you two to make sure that everything is copacetic. Mm-hmm.
The process that Mr. Black's talking about is not out of standard. To bid something is not always the lowest bid. It is the best bid. I understand what you're saying. If we're trying to coordinate this and we've got, I asked this question when the first bid came around, was is there a curing time? Is there a time that the first portion of this job needs to take place and then before the second portion comes down and lays over it? I asked mm-hmm. that question whenever the mm-hmm. first bid was let. So they are close. I want to get that first part of it done, and if it's
I want to honor the fact that we've already selected the company for the first part, which was an amount somewhere in the neighborhood of $8,000, if I'm not mistaken. It was close to
it was only $6,000, and I can't remember the hundreds of dollars, but it's less than $7,000.
It was just my point that here's a company that's off in Fort Scott, Kansas, that might say we had hoped to get the bigger contract, and that, therefore we're not interested so much in the smaller by itself, mm-hmm. and that was where I was headed.
On that portion of the job, I understand what you're saying, Ron, and that would be something I don't think it would be as far as inappropriate, because we're considering for them to call that company and ask them if they still want to honor their bid on the first project.
Mm-hmm. Which is what you had suggested.
That's
right. Yeah. I would make the call to the MTS first and make sure they're willing to, and I'm sure they would be willing to honor their first one, and then call Mid-Continental and say, we will allow you to pull out.
No, we're not going to allow them. We want to make sure that they still want to do it. So I don't think you need to call MTS first. You need to call Mid or Continental and make sure that they're still okay with their original bid and they'll still do the job. We've already awarded the contract to them, correct?
Well, they're so obligated. You don't have a bond on them or anything like that. But, you know, they're a good company. I'm sure they would never want to pull back from anything that they...
Obviously, where I was headed with that, it seemed like that it might be wise to do the whole project all together, mm-hmm. Do the repairs and do the rest. Well, then again, maybe not. But.
Well, here's one thing. Mid-Continental, on part one, what they said was from the time that they get the notice to proceed, they'll be done in 30 days. I suspect they've probably done quicker than that, but they are supposed to be done in 30 days. You could, this part two, you could wait till they're done, or 30 days, before you actually award the part two.
Is there a time frame on the bid form?
90 days. You have 90 days.
Yeah. Let's do it that way.
So you're suggesting not to make a motion today?
To go ahead and award? I'd like to know what they said. If I'm a company and I'm wanting to come and having to travel at four for a $6,000 bid and somebody else is doing the job that I thought that I might get the entire project on, it might not be unreasonable to back out.
That's fair to them. That's fair to them. I said, I think the phone call needs to be made. Hey, you guys are $27,000 higher. And you can see if they still want to do it.
Do you want to go ahead and work it?
No.
I think the sooner we do that, the sooner we're going to get... I was ready to have a discussion as whether or not we had to spend the money this year, but this has been so far under what we budgeted, I'm excited to get her done.
Ron, anytime there's a bid that is that far off from the top bid and all the other bids, because it is exactly half of the major bids that are in the middle, the 67, the others were 119,
175 was upper.
But the upper part of it, but you're talking about your middle range, that this is exactly half of what your middle range is, that is some concern to me. And I'm tickled that we came in with a low bid, but I still have other questions about the time frame, because I'm thinking about the project on the covering, the roof that we budgeted for it, mm-hmm. That Mr. Black had talked to us about the 10 years of warranty, or 10 years if possible, if it wasn't treated right, that it could be damaged at that point.
Do it again.
We talked about putting a roof on it. I'm concerned about all that. So
I wonder if we could have Mr. Black place whatever he feels are the appropriate calls. Number one, check with MTS, tell them that you and Ron have taken a look at these bids. You're prepared to make a recommendation to us, if in fact you are prepared to make a recommendation, that we go with their bid. You want to make sure that their bid is what they say it is.
Yeah.
That they didn't.
I don't think it's inappropriate. I think it's something I would appreciate if I was a contractor.
We've done that before. Yeah, we've done that before.
I think the bid, all the bids are public knowledge. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Now?
Yes.
Anybody can.
That's the reason we want the spreadsheets available to them.
Right. So
it'll be on our website.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when we talk to MTS, we can say, okay, you can look at the bids now.
Mm-hmm.
Are you okay?
You ready to move forward if you're selected?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ready to go. And they say, you bet, or they turn pale and say, Wow.
Did I forget something?
We made a mistake.
They will turn pale. And they,
well,
that's just normal. Well,
let me inform you, I'm not going to let them turn pale and come back and bid a dollar less than the next high one. It's not.
No,
I'm
not
going to
do
that. No, you shouldn't let them do that. No. I wouldn't do that at all. If they say yes and they go with their bid,
yeah,
fine. If they don't, then if you give them a chance to withdraw,
then I'll select somebody else.
Then we'll probably go with two.
Then they're disqualified from the project. Mm-hmm. That's their only real option.
So when they look at all the bids, they'll have the option to, well, we'd like to withdraw.
You know, I was in the contracting business for years, and if I had bid a third of what the top bid was, I'd be very concerned with my bid. Not what theirs was, but what my bid was. Yeah. So that, yeah.
Can
that
we,
in itself would
can
be,
we leave this in their hands, yes, then? And perhaps if it works out, reschedule for a discussion on next Monday?
That'd be it.
Okay. Can you work with Nikki on that in the agenda?
Okay.
If, in fact, we've reached some...
Yeah, we can have a recommendation by Monday.
That would be great.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. I know that we have the number one, the 2013 technology plan, and the company that was going to be here have canceled. So we'll remove that from our agenda. Apparently the presenter had an accident. Postage machine. I wish we had this big a turnout for every issue. Why is he staying over there?
He wants his own microphone.
He's got a cough.
Can you cough from the back of the room, Joe? Go ahead, I'm sorry. We have an issue with our postage machine, and you all are going to talk with us about that today?
Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I'm telling you, sir.
Yeah, Don, it's just, I guess, there is the main issue seems to be user-based, and the machine keeps breaking down, either just regular maintenance or seems like we're fixing a lot of user errors that, you know, people that don't really know how to use it. And I think the more hands on the machine probably is not a good thing. Just seems like ever since the mail clerk position was dropped, we've been having a lot more problems with the machine.
And we did have a service guy out, and he did state that the machine probably would last us, but as long as we've got so many people, it needs to be cleaned every time you do, you know, every day. Probably wouldn't hurt it to be cleaned and wiped down, because the sensors is what's getting us on most of this stuff. Is the, you know, the sensors for running your postage through, the way. All that stuff gets out of whack whenever those sensors aren't cleaned every day, and it builds up and builds up to the point where we don't know where all those sensors are. I mean, Joey and I go in there every once in a while and try to remember. And that's our biggest problem.
Same thing with supplies. There's not really a dedicated person to look at, you know, when supplies are running out or anything like that. So a lot of times we kind of get caught off guard when suddenly we're out of, you know, sticker tape or ink or
water.
Well, the ink, the wet ink solution that they have to have.
Who was the male person under before?
Mike Gibbs.
It was a gentleman who transferred over to become a jailer.
But who was it? Was it under a specific office?
We eventually put it in HR, didn't we? Or no?
We have now. You have IT?
Now.
It was under.
Well, let's just state this. We will place a mail clerk into position within the next week or 10 days. And that would solve the problem as far as starting to train
Well, the machine that we have is, what, 10 years, 12 years old?
Yeah.
How long did the guy say the machine would last if we had somebody in there that would get taken care of?
The repairman that's come has told us a couple times that the machine that we have is still a great machine. It's just the...
We just need to get something that one person dedicated.
There's a bunch of variables with it. When each department runs a batch of mail they want to go through, I mean, the thing has a speed adjustment on it where you can make the thing move at a snail's pace, or you can make it really move the mail through real quick. So it gets driven kind of hard because people aren't trained on how to set that speed adjustment on it. So, of course, when you send too much through it, some of the cards I know that we send through are curved, that if it was a flat piece of paper, it'd go through just fine. But since it's curved and they run it through there too fast, it gets caught in there. And once the thing really starts jamming up on it, that's when too much glue comes for the tape, or too much ink comes out to print the postage on there, and that's when the sensors get all jammed up at the same time.
Like this last time, the ink cartridge just blew up, and so it throws ink all over inside the system. So you have to know how to take that cartridge out and replace it. Well, I didn't know how to do it, and plus it covers your sensors, then you've got a problem going in underneath there.
We had training basically the week after we got the machine, so that was 10 years ago.
Well, and as previously stated, I guess the mail clerk also picked up mail, delivered mail, ran the post office, so it alleviated a lot of...
And
currently, we have one major machine. It's in this facility, and we have people who are down in the judicial facility that bring their mail down here to utilize this machine, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And when we had a postage person, they would go down there and pick up their mail, so they didn't have to come up.
Oh, I see. Well, I also heard rumor... Am I not correct that we have elected officials who have stepped up if the need be and have offered technology funds enough to pay for a machine?
Yes.
What are you all suggesting to us? I've already heard your comments about the mail clerk. I know that there was also a request to send the machine we have, if in fact it could be repaired, to the other facility, which does have some bulk mailings, but far less usage than we have here because of assessor, collector, and other high-end users, certainly the clerk at election time.
If we do send the machine we have right now over to there, if somebody else is operating it without the training, it could somewhat
same
be
thing.
Of the same maintenance nightmare that we're incurring right now. It would be great if we, I mean, I guess the best-case scenario for usage here at the county, of course, is to have a newer machine, you know, hopefully newer technology, is just more efficient, less requires less maintenance. But it also would be nice to have a maintenance contract set up by somebody from Pitney Bowes that actually maybe came monthly or something, just to make sure that both machines or whatever we have is actually still working well. I mean, I don't even think we know of any training programs or anything like that. So when we do hire a mail clerk, of where to start to send them off and get educated on the machine that we have. So,
well, we just have to call Pitney Bowes and they'd probably send somebody out. One thing that is a negative about this machine, and the only negative, it's not worth probably spending $20,000 for, but is the accounting side of it. Whenever people want to know how much postage, it does a bulk total for each department, which has got a code. And I know that Melissa, we may look into, might be an attachment that we could put on this machine that, you know, maybe be able to keep this one and get those modules to go along with it. I don't know. But I know Melissa said there was, if we looked at a new one, there's some other things that she's having to do before a printing for the assessor that would help out. We could get that module on a new one.
You know, I've started to say that I've been in a couple of courthouses that have machines that do whatever you want it to do.
Well, and there's some modules I think Melissa looked at that not only would add some efficiency, but actually save some costs on the postage itself.
Well, one of her deals I know is address verification. She's making sure that when we pay for postage that it's going to a valid address and not going to come back to us in the mail as a return to sender and we just wasted 44 cents. So. I know that was one of her main concerns, is that Pitney Bowes has software available to do a lot of address verification.
So by that look, it would, a new machine would be
What if they do the address verification and say it's valid and it comes back? Do we get charged for it, I wonder?
Oh, yeah. If the mail, if it goes out, processes.
No, I meant under an app that says that it's a good address.
I have no idea. I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of guarantees they
offer. Post office doesn't stand behind this postage machine as far as the money goes. If you over postage it or anything, you want your money back. It's like pulling teeth to get your money back.
Yeah. Well, I know when talking to Bob upstairs in the olden days when they put postage on something, you know, you over postage if you think that, well, it's more than an ounce.
Right.
And he said it saved him hundreds of dollars on just immediately.
Yeah, the way on the way function.
What price.
Money. Yeah, it's been beneficial.
What are you all formally recommending to us?
A person. And then
the possibility of either a new machine with a maintenance agreement, I think, is what we're...
So do you guys agree to assign Joe as being the person?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All in favor?
Thank you. Is there anybody else wants to weigh in on that? I appreciate taking care of that. Andy has a working knowledge of the machine.
Yeah.
Right. He is the most knowledgeable person of it right now. He was actually here when it was installed.
You know, I really thought he was red when he came in. That's all changed.
And if it breaks down.
Do those eyes open, Joe? Oh, there they are.
They're there. There. I was not prepared for that kind of recommendation.
Okay, a person. Anything else?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Keep the old one, then getting a maintenance agreement or something with it.
Yeah.
Well, what I would like from you, and you don't have to tell us today, I'd like from you to tell us whether it's advantageous for us to keep the old one or to purchase a new one. The very fact that we've had officers that have stepped up with their technology funds that have said they would carry the finances, which means it doesn't come out of GCR, and or any existing budget that falls within or under the county commission is huge. So I just need to know from you all, not today necessarily, but as soon as possible, what your thoughts
are. There is a state bid out there for Pitney Bowes and Neopost and another deal. Ron found those for us. So those is
what kind of money are we talking about, Mr. E?
I don't know how much the machine costs, but I know that those contracts are semi-emergency. Let's say we hired somebody and they were trained on our existing machine, and 3-4 months from now we have an emergency. We decide you need to spend money to replace it. I think we could do it then, and then we would operate under this contract. Only contracts. I reviewed them, looked at them up close. They're real simple.
Can you do some research for us to give us an idea of what?
How much your machine costs? Sir?
Yes, sir.
We're already ballparking $25,000.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
That's why
it's a pretty expensive ballpark.
That's why we've been kind of dragging our feet and trying to make the one we have work the best we can. And that's where my hesitation comes on. It is, I think, just getting the mail person here could.
What is the cost through the company that gave us the machine to have them periodically maintain it?
I don't know. They've got several maintenance agreements, but I don't know.
Yeah,
exactly,
we just have to see. I know they charge $150. It was $150 an hour just to come out. Then it's so much per mile, and the whole on the bill was $542, but $300 and some of it was just.
Well, and the other thing about not being on a maintenance agreement is they're obligated to service their maintenance agreement customers first, so they generally will take a couple of days to get out to us.
Yes, mm-hmm. And that hurts.
I understand that. But we're talking, if I'm not, you had said 200 and then 300. And then,
mm-hmm.
So are we talking 500 plus time? Or?
No, it was 500 and some with what he did. And all, he didn't have to put any parts, I don't think, on it. He just had to clean things.
It was just labor, yeah. But they charge
They come out of Springfield?
Yeah, I think so. And it seems like they're probably here at least, I'd say at least every other month at this rate right now. They're coming at least.
They charge us for 2 hours.
Yep.
So if we had a maintenance agreement, that would include the hourly rate, or it would be a flat amount?
It would be, usually we just pay them out, and they just come out whenever we call them.
I'd be aiming to try to just get that cost fixed and done.
Could you help us find out what that might be?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is there anyone that would have a use for the old machine if we decided to buy a new machine? If the word is that the old machine is a good machine except for operating the operator, is there some other way to approach someone that might want to buy this machine? And
we could do that, or whenever we negotiate on purchasing one, if it's a trade-in, they may give us a pretty good deal. So we did that on the last one, and we paid 15, ended up paying around $15,000-$20,000 for it then. So, you know, if that's, you know, they may give us a pretty good deal.
I'd like to know all the options so that we can make a decision here, and we'll go to working on this mail clerk business immediately.
So that it doesn't tear up before we get a mail person in, or who's going to run the machine?
Right now, each
department.
So did we?
I just saw Joe raise his hand.
No, nope, I didn't. Oh. Nope.
Thank you for volunteering, Joe. I really appreciate that. Way to step up and serve the citizens of Cheney County.
I'm going to put a star right out there by Joe's name.
I'll give you a star sticker.
As long as I get a sticker.
As long as you get a sticker.
Star by that.
Any other comments, gentlemen? So you've already heard pretty good idea about price. He's going to find out what the service agreements have cost. And if you have anything further to share with us, please do. We will discuss your request for re-implementing the mail clerk position.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sounds good.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
It is, for your edification, there are probably four or five positions that we have in the county system that are within the budget, but that have not been filled. That's one of them. But every time we don't fill one of those, it saves. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you don't mind, I mean, we still have the one position available open in my department right now, and I am, up for somewhat subtasking that person a little bit. If we could, if mail was to come in and could be scheduled to be ran through the machine, I don't mind that our extra person down in our department be the one to be trained as well, or be the person to run the machine, as long as we can get them on an organized schedule.
And the person to do all the mail with all the departments.
That's the part I don't want to volunteer for.
And the person to go to the post office four times a day for the reporter.
Right.
No, I mean, there's a lot.
I know, I'm just trying to help the situation a little bit on operating machine, or if the mail person comes and goes.
Did we delete that position?
No.
Not yet. I haven't gotten that memo yet. But I just wanted to throw that out there to you guys.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Thanks for your time.
Corps of Engineers Supplemental Agreement. Hello, Nikki.
Brandy Hayes was going to join me. I'm not sure what happened. I sent a message over to him. He may be out in the field somewhere. Back towards the end of October, the Corps sent us the supplemental agreement. The prior commission viewed this, and we have never paid any money for what they're asking. And so
what they've done is they suggested that we pay a fee for, would you explain what this is?
To have access. What Randy told me is we are getting a blanket easement that should be completed in March. And this would fall underneath that. So there should be no reason that we would pay this amount for access. And in speaking with Commissioner Strahan, he also agreed to that at that point.
Yes,
I think I feel like there's some lack of communication within the Corps, because we had an individual within the Corps that told us, do not move forward with this, but yet we had another individual contact us and ask us, what's the update? Why don't we have this signed?
Yeah. This is, I think this mainly concerns launching pads. And this is in the basic agreement that we had on 59 lake accesses. And we're not prepared to pay. So far, we haven't paid for any lake accesses. And now this is a new item that they've come up with, and I'm not prepared to pay for this one either. So I'd like to know, I guess, whoever this gentleman is. I've not met this one. Maybe he's new, but I'm not prepared to pay for any lake accesses until we've completed the lake access agreement that we've already have signed with them.
My suggestion is that we take no action on the agreements that are in front of us, then, gentlemen, until we have those questions answered. Is that all right?
Yep.
I'm going to give all this to you here shortly. Is that the last that we have this morning? Rick, was there something else that we've missed? Or?
Well, I thought I was going to be on the agenda for financial audit. I just want you guys to be aware of that.
We don't have it on here, Rick. Let's give Rick a time to chat about that, if you will, on Monday, if that's okay.
Okay.
That way we won't be stepping out of school because we're not agendized for that.
I understand. We also have, you can have some trouble with time, right? Just want to get this out and get it done. That's
the best. Oh. I'm getting ready to recess until we have an executive session at 1. Would you be available for me to chat with you? And,
sure.
Okay. I can do that.
Yep.
Nikki, is there something here for this morning that we have not done that we should have? And are we scheduled for? We're scheduled down here, right, for the executive session?
Mm-hmm.
No, conference room.
Commissioner.
Is that upstairs?
Yeah.
What's that say?
Yes.
This is here.
Oh, okay. Which is it? I want to know where to put my stuff.
It's not the work session.
The work session.
Oh, we have a 1 o'clock.
We have executive session. That's what I'm referring to.
Yeah.
Where is that at? Here or upstairs?
Let's do it here.
Let's just do it here. And here's all your paperwork, young lady. Gentlemen, I would suggest we stand in recess until 1 o'clock. Let me restate that. Let's stand in recess until 1 o'clock.